The most broken Pokemon are the kind of Pokemon you'd expect to be busted. And we're not just talking legendaries though. Often, yes, they are. But we're also not even talking that semi-legendary category of mythical Pokemon either. Similarly, it's no shocker that many Mega Evolutions are OP. Pseudo-legendaries are often pretty busted too. Like, is it really that surprising that Gen 9's Baxcalibur was incredibly busted? Or that Gen 4 saw the bans of both Garchomp and Salamence? Even starters being broken, a previous taboo, has become more of a norm with Game Freak's known favoritism kicking in. Speed Boost Blaziken was an anomaly, but with the follow-ups Greninja, Incineroar, and Cinderace, as well as two Mega Charizards, Game Freak's gotten into a new habit of making it so your first Pokemon happens to be one of your best, too. So what really interests us is when the so-called regular Pokemon are broken, the Pokemon that don't have some sort of status attached to them. As a general guideline for anyone needing one, think of the kind of Pokemon you'd encounter multiples of in the wild when playing through the story. That's what we'll be exploring today. Quick notes, quote-unquote broken doesn't necessarily mean a Pokemon was banned, so much as it was really, really good. Though of course it could be the case, and we're also talking a specific point in time as opposed to permanent longevity. So with that in mind, join us in counting down the top 5 most broken regular Pokemon of all time. It seems bizarre that such a long-standing, multi-generational titan of Walling and OU and Ubers alike is so readily available for any player wandering through Unova's Chargestone Cave. But indeed, there you'll find Ferroseed, which then evolves into one of the most extraordinary defensive Pokemon ever, one which possesses not only incredible bulk and resistance laden typing, but a support move pool of tremendous depth and impact that means with each of its many effortless switch-ins, it's equally effortless in exerting pressure on the opponent, both immediate and long-term. Quote-unquote, quote, ban Ferrothorn was generally something people used to say in Black and White 1. It never gained any serious traction, but even so, it reflected the widespread sentiment of Ferrothorn being obnoxiously difficult to KO, since it augmented its own survivability while wearing the opponent down even faster through Leech Seed, often amplified by Protect. You want to switch around to shrug off the Leech Seed? Have fun taking damage from all of Ferrothorn's hazards. Seeing as Ferrothorn blocked its own Leech Seed, there were often games of chicken as two Ferrothorns stared off, each not wanting to switch out and get something else Leech Seeded, but also not wanting to give the opponent a free switch as they wasted PP on already maxed out hazards, but also not wanting to attack the opposing Pharaoh because they'd be hurt by Iron Barbs. No wonder the dominant team style in Gen 5 became Superman, which maximized longevity largely through ignoring spikes or hazards altogether through Flyers, Levitators, and Magic Guard Pokemon. With other styles, you were always at risk of Ferrothorn doing Ferrothorn things and messing with you. Even if you had a Magnezone or had lots of fighting and fire moves, Rain teams in particular became so despondent against opposing Ferrothorn, they realized the only consistent, safe, actually reliable answer was to go to their own Ferrothorn and use knockoff. Indeed, knockoff Ferrothorn became a necessity on Rain as a result. And that's just Gen 5 OU. Ferrothorn was consistently dominant in Gen 6 through 8 of OU, to the point where it prompted questions of banning spikes and where every discussion about potentially banning Scald would inevitably get met with, yeah, but doesn't Ferrothorn become broken without Scald? Putting aside the implication both questionable and misguided that Ferrothorn's free switches should and must be answered with luck, Ferrothorn was similarly elite in each of those generations' uber tiers as well. It would unquestionably be ripping it up once again if it were in the game in Gen 9. On the other hand, we've got Breloom and Amoongus, who aren't nearly as impactful as Ferrothorn in and of themselves, at least in singles, but have been mirrored in controversy for their access to one of the best moves in the game, Spore. Breloom is already a great Pokemon without Spore, but Amoongus's defensive utility, while certainly decent, isn't quite so incredible as to manage too much of a niche without it. With it, though, it was a key OU force in Gen 5, so good in Gen 6 as to be genuinely OU, and strong again in Gen 7 OU. It also had its time in Gen 9, but that didn't last because eventually sleep moves were banned. And of course, who could forget its many VGC appearances, even being tied with Incineroar for most world championships. Sleep as a status has generally become viewed as more broken over time, and Amoongus was a shining example. Without Spore, it's not all that. But with Spore, its defensive utility becomes so much more valuable. It's not that its Walling ability somehow increases. It's more that you're better off when using it because it's not passively walling with little else to do, as is the case when it can't use Spore. When it does have it, it turns the switch ins it gets into an opportunity to get something dangerously close to a free automatic KO on the opponent. It's not quite sheer code, but that doesn't make it healthy either. Now, if Spore makes something as passive as Amoongus and OU mainstay, imagine what it can do for a Pokemon of such offensive ferocity as Breloom. Countering Breloom is so difficult because before you can counter Breloom itself, you have to answer its Spore. And while there's some overlap between Spore answers and Breloom Breloom answers, it is quite limited. Between Spore and its immense power, Breloom, even if it doesn't quite reach a KO, often has the effect of severely busting up two Pokemon, which is incredible reach. If the exploitability of Anti-Sleep Tactics' unreliability already applies to Amoongus, no, Lumberry, Taunt, Toxic Orb, Poison Heal, and even Sleep Talk don't quite cut it as consistent answers, then it is doubly the case with Breloom's powerhouse attacking. The player base wanted to ban Spore because of it in Gen 4. Heck, they want to ban Sleep as a whole in Gen 3, in large part due to Breloom's Spore, even though it didn't even have physical Grass Stab back then. The Spore duel were at their most powerful and controversial in Gen 5, where the Sleep counter resetting upon a Pokemon switching out made the status the closest to an auto-KO it's ever been. Here, Amoongus often pulled double duty as both Sleep User and Sleep Absorber. It fit Sleep Talk in nicely, and this allowed it to absorb Sleep from both other Amoongus and, of course, Breloom. Here's the problem. The notion of just use Sleep Talk or get wrecked, lol, is not healthy. Most Lumberry Pokemon famously don't stand up to Amoongus' longevity or Breloom's power. Not everything can run Taunt. Even Poison Hero Gliscor isn't an ironclad answer to Amoongus, because it likes Hidden Power Ice, nor Breloom, whose powerful bullet seeds threaten it greatly. And even if you have Sleep Talk, you're not safe. Viable Sleep Talkers are few and tend to be unreliable into our sporing friends for the same reasons as Lumberry. Plus, even if you do absorb Sleep successfully, the moves you draw from Sleep Talk are entirely RNG dependent, so whether your Sleep Talker actually does anything is up to Lady Luck. That is, assuming you don't wake up early on an attempted Sleep Talk. Alternatively, you hope you wake up, but you might keep sleeping and do nothing anyway. This was affecting Gen 5 OU tournament play so badly, eventually the player base wound up doing what had been discussed since the days of Darkrai almost a decade earlier. They banned Sleep entirely. Amoongus became a niche pick, while Breloom continued to destroy OU, but with Spore, they were busted. Like Ferroseed, Drillbur pops up rather unassumingly during playthroughs of Black and White. Sure, its evolution Extra Drill is featured on Gym Leader Clay's team, but you'd have a difficult time guessing this was a Pokemon reaching heights of brokenness as to make even Cynthia's Garchomp look tame. Previously, Sandstorm had been largely a weather of passive damage, and it didn't really get abused outside of Tyranitar's special defense boost in Gen 4, which of course was enormous, and was quite helpful on the occasional Aerodactyl and Rhyperior as well. However, it wasn't abused with the kind of direct offense lent to Rain, with Swift Swim, boosted water moves, and Can't Miss Thunder, nor Sun with Chlorophyll, boosted fire moves, and no charged Solar Beam. Even Hail had Can't Miss Blizzard. This wasn't exactly missed though, given that Sand was already such a powerful metagame shaping force with what it had. But that's exactly why it was such major news when Sand became even better through enabling boosting abilities and Landorus' Sand Force and Extra Drill's Sand Rush. The former was highly contentious, the latter was a metagame warping monster. In Sand, Extra Drill outsped everything in sight, enabling it to unleash its Salamence tier attack stat and stab Earthquake, often powered further by Swords Dances, to slice through almost anything. Even the go-to priority moves carrying over from the previous generation, like Scizor's Bullet Punch and Dragonite and Lucario's Extreme Speed, were resisted and bounced right off. Early Gen 5 OU was a screaming cacophony of brokenness, Deoxys Attack, Darkrai, and Shaman Sky, but Extra Drill's power was such that it made itself heard loud and clear, even above the ear-shattering din of these never-should-have-been-unbanned overlapping voices. Much of the player base was screaming for its ban right off the bat, but their cries for help disappeared into the void for almost a year. It would take four attempts for Extra Drill the Suspect to become Extra Drill the Uber. It was like Extra Drill was a criminal, known for committing some of the most blatant offenses known to the legal system. But for some reason, even though suffering from its transgressions said, this is fine actually. Anyway, Extra Drill was also tremendous in Gen 5 Ubers, turning Sand into a playstyle on par with the famous Ground Sun and Kyogre Rain that had previously shaped the weather landscape, and thus that of all of Ubers for two generations. Sure, Tyranitar was used in Ubers, but out-and-out Sand teams were much rarer and certainly not at the level of power that significantly defined the meta brought about by its Extra Drill incarnation. Come Black and White 2, bulky Extra Drill with Mold Breaker also featured effectively on Rain teams, completely walling standard Stealth Rock Dialga while popping up rocks itself even through Espeon's Magic Bounce. And it didn't even end there. In an attempt to curtail the hazards unstoppably ransacking OU, a series of unprecedented rule changes were pulled so as to allow Extra Drill back in OU, so long as it wasn't allowed to use Sand Rush on the same team as Sandstream. Cool, right? Nope, not cool at all. Because Rain Team started using Sand Rush Extra Drill to counter Team Sand, and as it turns out, it wasn't exactly healthy when the already threatening Rain Teams could unleash a Pokemon so broken that Sand sand teams weren't allowed to use it themselves. They put opponents in a true lose-lose position. Let them keep the rain and lose to their rain abusers, or change the weather to sand, as was the safe way to not get trucked by rain, and lose to Excadrill. As a result, Sand Rush as a whole was banned, even when Excadrill wasn't being used on actual sand teams. And that's still not all. To this day, a significant majority of the player base considers Excadrill broken on sand teams because of how outrageously hard it hits with Sand Force. Turns out a free life orb boosts both stabs, and even the coverage of Rock Slide is kind of insane for a Pokemon whose typing lets it hit the field so naturally. Excadrill completely dominated Gen 5, and then, even with Sandstorm no longer permanent, still used Sand Rush to metagame defining effects in Gen 6 and 7. As well as becoming a top 2 Pokemon in its own right, no sand needed, for its Mold Breaker set Stealth Rock, Rapid Spin, and Clefable checking utility in Gen 6. Excadrill at its peak was one of the most busted Pokemon the game has ever seen, and even with generational mechanics shifting against it, it continues to thrive. Of these innocuous-looking Pokemon, perhaps none has drawn more ire over the course of its competitive career than Clefable. Oh sure, the Bliss Chanseys inspire some heated words as well. There's a reason Ban, Scar, and Bliss was a popular phrase in Gens 3 and 4, but at least their effectiveness is obvious. Their special bulk is otherworldly, and their HP stat is so enormous, they even become quite good at taking physical hits. Heck, in Gen 3, Blissey is one of the more reliable answers to standard variants of Dragon Dance, Salamence, and Gyarados. So to sweep with them, you don't just have to weaken the physical wall, but the supposed special wall as well. However, with Clefable, the reason players erupt into such apoplectic rage is because its immortality tends to mystify them. Not so much the part where it ignores passive damage, that part is simple enough. In theory, it's the fact that Clefable always seems to shrug off its hits that it shouldn't. Its bulk is incredibly deceptive. Of course, it gets to use the deceptive bulk to its fullest extent. Unlike almost every Pokemon, which is hampered by passive damage in some way, as great as we intuitively know Magic Guard to be, we don't fully appreciate it until Clef winds up stonewalling a team that hits quite hard by all accounts. We're so used to our hard hits being augmented by standards like Stealth Rocks, Sandstorm, and so much more that we don't see just how much direct strength it takes to power through something when those elements are removed from play. And for teams that take a more indirect approach, it becomes downright nightmarish. Clefable went from being excellent in Gen 4's UU to dominating its OU so thoroughly, it was the breaking point for Dugtrio, only for it to become proclaimed as busted by many even without Dugtrio. It even gained the legitimate niche in Ubers. And remember, this was all while it was still a normal type, meaning it had next to zero resistances to work with. Being able to ignore passive damage that is thrown around so commonly is so major that Clefable even found a niche in the famously spikes-ridden yet massively power-crept Gen 5 OU as well. Then Gen 6 made it a fairy type, and well, it's no wonder Aura's OU eventually became known as the Clefable tier, characterized as such for the litany of Calm Mind Clefable Wars that ended many a battle. Being immune to passive damage was already insane, but previously, it was balanced out by Clefable's normal typing leaving it hit neutrally by most attacks, as well as notably packing a fighting weakness. Now though, you take that immortality in the face of passivity and tack one of the best defensive types in the game on top of it, so you're not taking damage from defense and you're stuffing even more offense through your amazing newly gained resist. Of course, it's not just these two factors, it's the fact that those enable Clefable in wielding its wicked support move pool, capable from doing anything from Stealth Rock to Knock Off to Thunder Wave to Wish to Encore to Heal Bell. This has allowed it to remain an OU staple to this day. It's an unusual form of brokenness because it doesn't shatter the metagames it's in, but being able to hold them together in the face of non-stop power creep is its own version of being broken. Think of how Landorus Therian is considered quote-unquote broken because of how it counters everything, but Clefable does so without a legendary stat spread. In fact, it does so without a single base stat even reaching 100, which itself isn't even particularly amazing benchmark these days, or for some time now. Now, this is not to downplay how insane the aforementioned Blissey and Chansey are, especially Blissey. Chansey is out and out bulkier, but the dependence on Eviolite means it's more vulnerable to knockoff and is forced to manually heal more often. Whereas Blissey's ability to hold leftovers or occasionally other items like the sun and rain stifling utility umbrella in Gen 8 Ubers or the shadow tag escaping shed shell in Gen 6 and 7 Ubers, Blissey was the first out and out wall to really push what was acceptable in OU even today. There are many players who consider it broken in Gen 3, where it is famously incredibly difficult to take down and a major threat in its own right, not because it hits especially hard, but because it counters so much that it can wind up quote-unquote sweeping you just by spamming Seismic Toss and Soft Boil. Of course, one shouldn't downplay Chansey's own strength when its added bulk leads to it devouring outrages. The pink blobs have been hated for quite a long time, probably because their happy demeanor makes you feel especially mocked for how overpowering they so often are, in the defensive sense of course, and for how incredibly difficult it is to break them. Ugh. XY is well known for hand-holding the player hard as they progress through the story, not just through the gang of happy-to-help non-rivals, but with the second console starter, the free Lucario, and their Megastone. However, the most egregious of all might be how easy it is to run through the game with the most broken Pokemon ever conceived, and one so easily accessible, in its pre-evolved form Honedge anyway, to anyone passing through Route 6. Aegislash was both comical and achingly obvious in how broken it is, so much so that in Gen 8 it became famous for a new reason. It had the daylights nerfed out of its previously mind-boggling base stat spread. Even the power creep mongers at Game Freak had become overtly alarmed about the perfect weapon they created, and that is quite a freaky thought, which further emphasizes the absurdity of anyone ever thinking this monster was okay. Oh sure, you could rationalize it with some junk that sounded smart. Gen 6 and 7 Aegislash doesn't literally have an absurd base stat total, it can only ever have the base stat total of one of its forms at a time, you see. Plus, its speed is bad in both forms. This all sounds reasonable, if you don't think about it, in the same way that Shadow Ball wielded by Aegislash and many other notorious ghosts in recent generations doesn't sound too broken because it's only 80 base power. Of course, anyone who plays the game and thinks about it will see that, in practice, Shadow Ball has the habit of putting an awful lot of pressure on an awful lot of Pokemon without an awful lot of effort. And even in the same vein, just because Aegislash doesn't literally have 150 defenses and offenses at the same time because it jumps between forms with the help of its low speed, which is far from being a drawback, it's actually one of Aegislash's greatest weapons. It withstands incredible punishment with ease thanks to its shield form's titanic bulk, then hops into its blade form to dish out some stunning punishment of its own. Barring getting attacked by foul play, its shield form's low offenses don't exist, because Aegislash literally cannot attack without switching into the blade form. Even in that foul play example, Aegislash's otherwise non-existent attack stat still works in its favor because it's so low. So on the first turn, Aegislash does in fact have both its incredible defenses and offenses. Okay, but after that first turn, it is vulnerable with those new paltry defenses, right? Theoretically, yes. But Aegislash has one of the freest reset buttons in the game. It literally puts its shield back on with King's Shield, which is kind of like Protect. On one hand, it doesn't stop status moves, but then again, those aren't your concern. The direct damage ones are, and King's Shield stifles them completely. Actually, it does even better than that. If you want to hit Aegislash with a contact move, as you very well might, given its weakness to popular dark moves Crunch, Pursuit, and Knockoff, you better be careful, because if you use the move as Aegislash uses King's Shield, you'll be punished for making contact with royalty through a swift -2 to your attack stat. So have fun with receiving even greater difficulty in scratching Aegislash's untouchable hide. The only Pokemon safe from this was Bisharp, whose Defiant ability canceled out the King's Shield's drop. But of course, Bisharp had to be very careful of Aegislash's Sacred Sword, and would usually just wind up letting Aegislash escape, only to come back in later. The fundamental fact of Aegislash swung almost every dynamic in its favor, with how it hit hard and how risklessly it jumped back into defensive capability, so potent that it was surviving Mamoswine's super effective Life Orb Earthquake, and most moves thrown at it were not hitting that hard, because Aegislash's defensive typing was stellar. Well, not literally stellar, but you know what I mean. You couldn't consistently try to wall it, and out-offensing it was even worse. When even Game Freak acknowledges they messed up, you know it's bad. David Byrne once said, you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here? The answer is that, upon consideration of this video's premise, we quickly realized that we could easily fill it entirely with Gen 9 Pokemon. Heck, we could fill several videos of this premise with just Gen 9 Pokemon. The power creep levels unleashed by Gen 9 were truly once in a lifetime, we hope, as we're both thrilled by and fearful of the possibility of Gen 10 going even bigger. Anyways, seeing as many of the Gen 9 Pokemon tend to be of similar breed, perfectly ludicrously min-max into oblivion, we decided to lump them all in together. The Paradox Pokemon alone could fill up this category. Fluttermane and Iron Bundle started things off absurdly so as to make Camu blush. Roaring Moon is OU again today, but it was Uber for a time. And what of Paradox Pokemon that have populated OU from the beginning? Iron Valiant has been under more scrutiny than a celebrity with a penchant for controversial comments. They don't even have to be outright busted either. Great Tusk is a nigh-perfect Pokemon, a fixture of OU. Its cousin Iron Treads is quite good too, a sort of modern Excadrill. Iron Moth like a sort of strange Volcarona from hell, and of course all their protosynthesis and quark drive further complicating matters, and beyond even the Terminator-like machinery of these machines optimized for OU excellence, Game Freak's more traditional creations also went over the top with tremendous ease. Annihilate brought amazing glory to the Primeape line, well and truly earning its name with the mind-shattering power of Rage Fist that got it sent to Ubers. Arcaladon did the same through bringing terrifying legitimacy to the idea of an OU Dialga, though through methods the Diamond mascot couldn't hope to replicate. Sneasler was faster than everything, stronger than everything, and just for kicks, also brought outrageous RNG to the game with Direclaw. It got banned for Unburden, but its poison touch was similarly aggravating. Finally, beyond the ban list, to this day, OU is ruled by two strange echoes of early generation 6. Bisharp received an evolution so strong, a mega evolution surely would have been more quaint, if only for the fact that it couldn't hold an item. King Gambit's incredible strength is launched to obscene levels by Supreme Overlord, making it the ultimate comeback king whose trap you can't help but fall into because it punishes you for achieving the very object of the game. While Aegislash's typing is back for good measure in Goldango, whose good as gold ability bears eerily similarity to Magic Guard, a Magic Guard that can block the fog and on a ghost type to boot, so it becomes the ultimate hazard protector. Oh, and also it's immune to taunt, of course. Game Freak seems to have been on a conscious mission to outdo themselves this generation, and for that we have to award their cumulative effort the number one spot on this list. And that's it. As always, let us know what you'd like to see for another video of this style, which we'll almost surely have to return to given that there are so many good options. Alternatively, maybe you disagree with the placements and would swap the grasses with the pink blobs, for example, though we have a difficult time imagining anything displacing number one. Whatever it is, let us know in the comments below, and we'll see you next time. And also check out our previous video, the top 10 most game-changing buffs in Pokemon. Thanks for watching, everyone. And as always, if you liked the video and you want to see more, be sure to subscribe to False Swipe Gaming for more weekly Pokemon content. And thank you so much to our patrons for continued support of our videos, and thank you to everyone else watching as well. And thank you so much to our platinum patrons. Thank you to Amphozenus, Alex Sable, Anthony Belval Renault, Bingleton, Daniel Isbeast, Funky, Glitcherton, Howl, Megamon VGC, Nurse Jake, Jack G, Pretzel SP, Spavoon, Gylaria, Soros and Croxen, Shiwei Miji, Stoneface Colin, Kiboflu, for their major support of our videos. And follow my crew on these social media platforms, and that's all I got. See you next time, everyone.